Exclusive radio.
She's not masturbating to those pictures of like your
of
your dad.
Probably right? not.
But also what I'm saying is it's more of like a I need to see what I'm working with.
Yeah,
you have to make sure it's not just an acorn that is fucking, you know, glued to the bottom of your torso. That. You know?
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
Yeah, you got it right that time. Third take. Third take's a charm. Like the first time for some reason, Jay's microphone wasn't working. Second time, he goes, Super Movie Brother Jay? Like a question mark at the end.
Yeah, because I was like, God damn it, how many times? I was stumbling over my words, and it's been a couple weeks since we recorded, so.
Damn it, who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
But it's been
two weeks. Look, it's been a long time since I've fumbled. Because I used to fumble all the time in this previous, like, first 50 episodes or something.
It's the 2 weeks. Me and you have been off for 2 weeks.
Yes.
Because I went and my wife had a baby. So if you've been listening to the previous, you know, replay episodes, you know that Lauren had given birth to baby Grayson. And it's 2 weeks
in. Beautiful boy.
He's settling in just fine and all that stuff. Because some people have been asking me, how's the baby? And it's like, well, I'm not going to tell you the baby's bad. So baby's good. I think he's good. I don't know. He eats, he sleeps, he shits, we change him, and that's pretty much his routine right now.
Traditional baby.
He doesn't have to have a personality yet, you know. I mean, I'll let you know when he becomes a little dick, I'll let you know when he's being a little dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bound to happen at some point.
We'll keep you honest, Dave.
We'll stay honest. So, I mean, but having a baby's not the only thing that's changed. I mean, Jay, in the 2 weeks, now has a place to live.
Yes.
He's no longer a basement dweller.
Yes.
In his parents' basement.
Officially moving into a condo in 2 weeks. Excited for that. A little scary, a little exciting. I'm definitely anxious to kind of... I just want it to be done and over with. I don't want to experience this whole process of moving.
What I'm excited for is, like, we talked about it in pre-roll. So
I like helping people move. I'm used to doing that shit. But
if you want to join our Patreon and you can hear the pre-roll conversation that we have before the show, then please do. But we've talked about in pre-roll. What I'm very excited for is the fact that your little black book, you know, is going to be completely refreshed. Yeah,
yeah,
you're. But well, you said you're throwing it out.
I'm going to turn the page.
You're starting all new ones.
Page. Yeah,
all new
absolutely.
Ones. All new ones. I'm excited. I'm excited for me and Lauren to vet new women. It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Time to start.
There are times where we have been truly awful to the women that you have brought to us.
Well, in behind closed doors.
Yes.
Not to anybody's
Never
face.
To their face.
Yes.
Yeah. Depending on how drunk we were.
Right.
Maybe a little bit to their face.
But yeah, I've unfortunately brought some girls into uncomfortable get-togethers with you guys in attendance.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And of course, sometimes I didn't know this
We don't know how to treat them because it's like, is this serious? Right. Do we want this to go anywhere? Like, you know, then we have to decide whether we're making that decision for you. You're like, Jay relies on us for so much.
But
so, like,
it's true.
Should we tell him what's a good relationship and what's not?
And I was a little upset when, like, I find out way after the fact, after we break up, like, about, like, a little quirk that you have on one girl or another girl. Actually, it was two different girls they can recall. But I was like, why didn't you tell me that then? You know, but... whatever. Either way.
Because we're good parents, Jay.
Either way, yeah.
We let you make your own mistakes. We're here to pick up the pieces.
Guide along, pick up the pieces, brush me off, pat me in the ass, and let me progress.
Say, me and Lauren have been raising children. Like, even before Logan, we started raising our first child, Jay.
Yeah, this is like my first day of college. You know, I'm getting out there.
I can't wait.
Branching out.
But so this is a big episode for us, and I don't mean big like in that it's monumental.
No,
it's gonna be fun. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
We always have fun. But we got a metric fuck ton of fucking movies to talk about. I have reviews.
But really quick, let me just say, we will try and keep it tight.
As tight as
possible.
Because
you know, we are actually starting this podcast very late for us.
Yeah.
So we want to keep it a little...
So we do have some movie news to go through.
Sure.
We got a bunch of reviews to do in What Are You Watching? So you and I are both going to talk about Palmer. We're going to keep that to like a 5-minute-ish review. I have Psycho Goreman to talk about, which I was very remiss that that came out while I was in the hospital and couldn't really talk about it on the show. So I'm gonna be doing that, but that's going to be 5-minute-ish review. I also watched Shadow in the Clouds with Chloe Grace Moretz, which is a Redbox original movie.
Yeah,
so I have a 5-minute-ish review for that.
Excited
as well.
About that.
And then you and I are coming together. Come together right now over me, which is what Jay always sings when he's in the circle jerk.
Oh, that's
in
true.
The center. Come together right now over me as you're just jerking two dicks off.
Hey, this is not Patreon. Keep it clean.
But you and I are coming together, and we are going to do a sort of a longer form review for Judas and the Black Messiah, which deserves a longer discussion.
Indeed. And I will be touching on also the new releases of Malcolm and Marie and Nomadland.
All right. And then, of course, we have news. Jay, it's time to get into What Are You Watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Never play this again.
All right, in the interest of keeping things tight, Jay, let's get started with something that we watched together.
Ooh.
You and I watched Palmer.
That boy, that's Sam. His mama took off. He'll be staying with us till she's back.
You know your boy, right?
Yeah.
In the hours that I've known.
Do you know when my mama's coming back?
He's gonna have to go in the system.
There's something seriously wrong with that kid.
Would you send me free?
How did you end up in prison?
Don't matter. I did what I did.
Bulk of what you did today.
Listen to me, son. Kids are mean, especially when they see something that they ain't used to seeing.
You ain't nothing but a criminal. You got no right looking after any child.
Now, this was just at the beginning of our hiatus, so this film came out probably about 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
Apple TV Plus original film starring my wife's, one of my wife's hall passes. She has several.
My hall pass, too.
Yeah.
With it for my own self, yeah.
My wife practically has a baker's dozen of hall passes, but
it's my in a box.
Justin Timberlake. And this sees him playing a recently released prisoner who moves back in with his grandmother and finds out that there is a family living in the trailer on the property that pays rent to the grandmother. And there is a little boy who is different than other little boys, but he is in need of some parental structure. And this unlikely man, Palmer, played by Justin Timberlake, is going to be the one that, without even knowing it, is providing him with that structure. And before he knows it, they are building a family.
And as well as the boy giving him some structure as well, post-jail.
But what I love is like this movie takes place in this vacuum, in this moment of Palmer's, you know, changing of life. And it ends outside of that vacuum, outside of that cocoon. Like, you know, it very much brings him back down to reality very quickly. And it brings you back down to reality as a viewer, because you spend so much time throughout this movie falling in love with this little kid, falling in love with Palmer, falling in love with this process and stuff like that, that you forget that there's real world struggles going on outside for both of these characters. And you are starkly reminded of that in one scene towards the last
you really
the
do.
Film.
Yeah.
And this movie, I'm not going to say it made me outright cry, because a lot of movies make me cry. I teared up and I really felt a lot during watching this movie.
Like I did as well. And I actually did. I welled up and tears fell down, baby. It was towards the end. And
you fucking little bitch.
But it's because of the great character development, and especially, you know, the chemistry between Palmer and Sam, and the little boy, Ryder Allen, who plays Sam, is just so strong and so sure of himself and so quirky and
unapologetically flamboyant and never once apologizes for
doesn't see any reason to.
There's a scene that happens in the trailer where
it's an issue
where you know Palmer's like yelling at him about wearing a certain costume for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, little boys don't wear that. What are people going to say? And he's like, then I'll be the first one. You know what I mean?
Such a great comeback.
Fucking love it. It's when he's talking about joining like that
the club.
The fake universe My Little Pony Club.
Right.
The Fairy Princess Club. And he's just like, little boys don't join this. They don't do this. And he's like, then I'll be the first one. You know, just like with all that confidence in the world, just staring back at an adult, telling you that you can't be this, you can't do this, you shouldn't do that. And he goes, why not? You know, like. And like that level of confidence, mm-hmm. just coming from a child, it's like I sound boastful and braggadocious, but like that is in my child. That's in Logan. Like I see that in Logan all the time.
I've known many children like this from working at Woods, and I have a friend who's like that. Her child is very much like that as well, and I love that. I'm drawn to people like that. I love seeing that because I don't have that within myself.
No, I don't either. You know,
I think I did when I was a very young kid a little bit, and I quickly think about out of that how for much, many reasons, but
I think about how much time in high school I spent hiding the fact that I was a nerd, like hiding the fact that like I loved Star Wars, I loved movies, uh-huh. I loved, you know, uh-huh. I loved fantasy, I loved sci-fi and stuff like that. I spent so much time hiding that stuff from people that, you know, that was all stuff that I did behind closed doors. I didn't have friends that I talked about that with. It wasn't until I was a junior or senior in high school that I found people. I was like, you know, where I found people were like, they're not going to judge me for who I am. They're not going to judge me for what I like or for what I do or anything like that. So like seeing that in a child. At such a young age
it's special.
I'm just like, it's gonna suck for you at some point, kid. Like I just want to like reach in through the screen.
Well, he's going to be having struggles, right. ups and downs his whole life.
Life's gonna suck for you at times. It really is.
Right.
But believe me,
you're gonna live it to the fullest.
You stay steadfast into this person that you know that you are, and it's gonna get better.
You will
change the world around you because you won't accept anything else.
100%. And you're going to have a more fulfilling life as well.
For sure. For sure.
And you don't even realize
this movie. Yeah, I absolutely loved this movie. I'm not saying it's like a perfect movie. It's definitely
it's not.
It's definitely slow.
I think they put issues.
They put too much mystery behind Palmer and what he did to land in jail
without the payback.
Right.
Payoff.
Yeah. And they put a lot of there's a payoff for it because the friend who betrayed him that wound him up in jail does pay him back at some point. However, it is such a plot device that it's like
didn't bring anything. Anything original.
Exactly.
When the story between the two of them was so powerful where that crutch of the plot device was just so weak, you know, it just was so noticeable. You know,
it didn't
feel necessary within the structure.
I also think it would have been helpful to see who Palmer was in prison.
A little bit. You needed to have a little bit more of a reference of
right,
you know, the past with him
it sounds weird, but like I know it's more realistic this way, but I almost needed Palmer to have more of a rough exterior, more like PTSD from being in prison and stuff and seeing that wall get taken down more.
And all he did was smoke and drink.
He was kind of a solid guy.
Yeah, I know.
Before he went to prison, in prison, and when he comes out.
Yeah.
This little kid brought out something in him that he didn't know that he had. But he was just kind of like this solid guy. You know what I mean? Like
He was.
Everyone has an uncle who went to jail. And if you don't, then you're not living life right. Or at least your uncles didn't live right.
And then on the other side of the coin, Juno Temple went full boat, druggy, bad shit, bat shit mama.
I never realized she's got a forehead like a drive-in movie theater.
She does. She's got like a...
To steal a line, but...
She kind of has that like Olivia Wilde type of forehead.
She's got a 6.5 head. Like, most of us have 4 heads. I've heard of 5 heads. She's got a 6.5 head. I love her, though.
She's such a great actress.
She's so good. But that hairline starts way in the back of her skull. It's very strange. Yeah. My child has a hairline that's better than hers, and he was just born, so... But no, I love this movie. Jay, real quick, we're running a little bit long with this. Again, this is another film that if you don't have Apple TV Plus, it's still not worth it for you to pick up Apple TV Plus for this alone.
Not yet. I mean, definitely check this out when you can, whenever that may be.
Yeah.
whenever that is, but don't go out of your way.
What do you got for it?
A minus. I got solid A- for me.
I got a B plus for it. So, okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, but I sat on it a little bit and thought about it, and I was like, it's great performance from Timberlake. Great performance from from this kid.
I think the message was so strong, and their chemistry was so strong, where like I really had to really it worked for me, and I wanted it. I feel like it's must watch. It's a must watch film. In many aspects, and I want people to see this.
Let's face it, Apple TV Plus isn't worth it until there's Oscar buzz for one of their things, right? Because
they don't have content.
But that's clearly the movie that's clearly the movies that they're going for. For Palmer, A minus for you, B plus for me. Yep. Solid film. If you have Apple TV Plus and you slept on it, get on it. Apple TV Plus, it'll slowly get there, or it'll die and fold into one of these other streaming services.
Well, they have more money than anybody in the world, so. They're not going to go away because they're not spending an overt amount of money. You know, they're picking and choosing their products. You know, they're not just throwing a shitload of stuff out onto the wall and seeing what sticks, like Netflix.
They're
you know?
The indie version of Amazon Prime, which is already already the indie version of Netflix.
It's just weird. I don't know.
You said tight. So let's,
sorry. Yes.
Let's move on to one of yours.
All right, Malcolm and Marie.
You are by far the most excruciating, difficult, stubbornly obnoxious woman I've ever met in my entire life. I fucking love you.
Oh, he's so sensitive. He's romantic. I bet he's sweet, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. When he's not being an emotional fucking terrorist.
Oh.
This is on Netflix. This just came out. It's a two-hander. This was shot during the pandemic.
Just like my dick. Two-hander.
You wish.
Yeah, true.
No.
True. We talked about it.
Lucky line.
I'm a grower, not a shower, but like when it grows, two hands, please.
Damn. I only get that when I'm lucky, when I'm like extra.
I'm kidding.
My blood is pumping extra. But anyway. John David Washington, Zendaya, whatever.
Mary Jane Watson.
Whatever you want to call her.
Mary Jane Watson, Euphoria.
The star.
You've seen it.
No. Yes, absolutely. And Sam Levinson.
Really, the star, because Zendaya is fucking killing it these days. So
she is. No, she really is. And Sam Levinson is the one behind Euphoria. And, you know, this is a very sleek black and white shot. Two-hander, as I said, post opening night, because he's a director and his film just came out. He's hyped up. She's not.
It's autobiographical fiction.
Yes. If you look into
this, this is Sam Levinson's like autobiographical fiction.
He does not believe that. He does not admit to it, but there's way too much proof behind that.
Well, there's always been the adage, you write what you know, right? Like,
And they address it. That's the problem with this movie.
Real quick.
It's so pretentious.
To drop a little bit of a plug, you write what you know. Our good friend Mark Dickerson has written a book, Art Farm.
Yes, this is true.
You write what you know.
Congratulations, Mark.
And it's a bunch of artists from different mediums coming together, and it's sort of a dark comedy and stuff like that. That is Mark Dickerson. You write what you know. And believe me, I'll be plugging the shit out of that book because I am getting myself a copy. I'm going to be reading
good.
It. And Mark deserves all the praise in the world. That's one of the reasons we haven't been doing movie cocktails is because Mark hasn't been here. He's been writing that book. He's been locked down in the pandemic. His wife's a doctor.
Yeah.
Once we're able to get
young kid
and movie cocktails, we decided is a face-to-face type of endeavor, so
it is.
We all need to be in person for that, but
it is.
So congratulations, Mark, for writing your very first novel.
First of many, I think.
First of, yeah.
I could see that.
Talented motherfucker. He's written a comic book. He's written a book. He's gone and he's
directed
made,
many films.
He's directed tons of short films and stuff like that. He's truly a guy that has a dream and he's fucking living it. And he's one of my good friends. And it's weird to say like I'm proud of somebody, but like I'm proud of him. Hey, Jay, don't worry. I've told you I'm proud of you too, buddy. So don't.
I was trying to think when you said that to me. I don't think it's ever happened.
You just got your own place, and I'm proud now.
All right,
I'm proud that you're.
I'll
fucking,
take it.
You're a homeowner. Yes. I'm fucking proud. Proud papa. Proud papa. Because I got a new baby, and now my other baby's moving out. But anyway, Marie. Yeah, Donnie and Marie. That's the name of the movie.
Donnie. Malcolm and Marie.
Malcolm and Marie, that's right.
So, this one was a disappointment for me because I think it was just so self-aware of itself.
Disappointment to everybody, from what I've heard.
Because, first of all, you don't need to, you can stop watching after the first 20 minutes. You get it. It's just literally a couple arguing about every little fucking thing that you could think of between a relationship.
Right, but which we've loved before.
That's the thing. It's
before midnight, right? Before midnight, before sunrise, before sunset. Like, all these movies, they're fucking great.
The script is fucked up. It really is. And it wants to be smart, and it's just not. And, you know, and the way they bring things up, and it's so wrong because it's a white writer talking about
a black director
and that kind of voice, and it's just so not right or accurate, and it's just very off-putting, and they get into critics.
Disingenuous sounds
they
sounds
get into
correct, yeah.
many different aspects of mental health and relationship dynamics, and just it's just toxic in so many different kind of ways. It's boring. It gets to that point where it becomes boring.
Wow.
Because it's just too much, and the performances can be somewhat elevated to grandiose levels.
Let me ask you this, because one of the big criticisms of this movie coming from criticisms, you hear that? Mm-hmm. That's the fifth beer hitting.
Sounds like me.
Yeah, that's the fifth beer hitting. One of the criticisms of this movie was Zendaya's age and John David Washington's age. And is that something that comes up in their arguments? Is that addressed that they're so vastly different in age?
No. I think
because they're nearly 15 years apart in age.
No, see. All right, so I got into a Twitter rant about that a little bit.
That should have been addressed in the film, is what I'm saying. I don't care. I'm not one of those people that say, like, she shouldn't have been cast in this movie. I'm not one of those people. I don't care. But it should have been something that was addressed in the film once you cast her.
No, because, age. I mean, she wasn't playing like a teenager. You know, she's playing
not
a young
teenager.
Adult. No, I know.
She is a young adult.
I know. No, I know, though.
But John David Washington is a grown-ass adult.
Yeah, but they don't talk about age in this movie. Okay. You know, it's just more or less her
actors age faster than all
her life
anyway, so.
And you know, I think for me,
Haley Joel Osment was 21 at the age of 12, so
my impression on the blowback on that is simply because she looks young.
Yeah, it's overhyped
for her age.
Not
and she only plays or mostly only plays teenagers, so that's why this clashes, because she's playing a mature role
for the 1% of the population who has seen Euphoria, you included. They've seen her play somewhat of like a more serious and adult role, but for the majority of the people who have seen her, they're like, that's the Mary Jane Watson girl, right? And if it's not that, then that's the girl from the Nickelodeon TV show, right? So
sure.
Seeing her here for a lot of people was like,
right,
oh, she's with that guy from Ballers.
Even with the upcoming Dune, you know, she's playing a young girl,
so.
That character. So this is a C+ for me. I think, you know,
bad movie.
It's
C+ is almost generous. You haven't said one good thing about it, to be honest with you.
It's slick. I like the way it's shot.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the direction and
it's slick. It looks good.
The style and the ballsiness of it. I understand where he was trying to go with it, but it's so poorly written. It gets dull.
Fair. All right, let's move on to one of mine. Let's move on to Shadow in the Clouds.
Oh, hey there, baby.
The hell are you doing here?
I'm commissioned to this flight.
Captain!
We haven't got time for this right now. Put her in the Sperry until we get up in the air.
I'm supposed to guard this.
I'll guard it for you.
Contents are confidential.
What's your name, honey?
Flight Officer Garrett.
Ain't no women in the Air Corps.
I'm a flight mechanic and a pilot.
You're not a pilot. You're a delivery girl.
Sir, requesting permission to fire on an enemy attacker.
You wouldn't even know how to fire a gun.
I was being polite.
She hit it! She was right! Who the hell are you, Miss Garrett?
What is she here for?
Did you hear that?
What the hell is that racket?
There's something on top of the plane.
Something on the goddamn turret!
Now, this stars Chloe Grace Moretz. It's a name we probably haven't heard in a long time.
I know. She should be doing bigger and better things.
Yeah,
she deserves more.
Well, I think she stepped away from acting for a little bit.
I think so.
If you don't recall,
she worked a lot when she was a young girl. Oh my God!
But so this essentially follows a young pilot, a young female pilot in World War II, who is traveling with a mysterious case onto a B-17, and she has a secret mission, or so she tells everybody on this flight crew, and that her package is top secret. No one is to look at it, and she winds up getting stuffed inside of one of the below deck turret away from her package, and down there she starts to see some mysterious goings on. She sees an evil presence that is on board, possibly a gremlin, possibly some form of Japanese warfare, because they are in the Japanese war zone. This movie was a ton of fun. This is a fun B movie. First off, Chloe Grace Moretz, I thought was really good in it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna say, like, as far as like acting goes, I'm singing the praises, because I don't think the script was there for the praises to be sung. But there's an interesting dynamic that's going on, because you have a female who is
What platform did you watch this on again?
So you can rent this anywhere that you would rent movies. I rented it on Amazon Prime. So
yeah.
But this is available. But it's a Redbox original. So Redbox, I find it interesting. I think we talked about this before. Another Redbox original that I really liked was Becky, which had Kevin James, and he was hunting that little girl, which was bloody fucking fantastic and awesome. And I still encourage people to check that one out. But so Chloe Grace Moretz is playing a female pilot who goes on to a B-17. She's carrying a secret package. She's on a secret mission. And when she gets on there, it's obviously all males, and she's dealing with that. You know, there is a lot of conversation about what to do with her sexually.
Ooh.
Before they stuff her down inside of a turret chamber.
That's bold.
Below deck. And while she's down there, she essentially comes into contact with a strange creature that she's trying to warn everybody about. She also is seeing Japanese planes flying around, and everybody is disillusioned in that. They are not in an active war zone. They are flying this mission outside of an active war zone, so Japanese don't come this far south. And it turns out that it's one of those movies where it's a go get 'em girl type movie.
Yeah, sure.
But I liked it. You know,
because it kept it fun. I mean, obviously it's a short film.
It's 83 minutes long. But this is just a fun B movie, right? There is a movie monster in this movie. It has a monster that's there. And you get that from the onset of the movie. The
fun CGI. I mean, you can't expect it to be.
It's fine.
We said meh. M-E-H. Meh.
Yeah. It's fine.
Sure.
The CGI and the character that Chloe Grace Moretz is playing is great. A little bit of a Mary Sue, I want to say.
Okay.
But they, when I say that, you know, they give you reason for why she is a good pilot, why she is a good fighter, why she is, you know, they give you cause for this stuff. So it's not like it's out of nowhere, right? It's just really fucking fun. And she's playing a badass woman.
Good for her.
In it. And she's doing it for, like, her motivation in the film. I won't give it away, but it is her secret package. But what her secret package is mind-blowing when it happens. Like, I don't mean mind-blowing. Like, it's like, my life has changed for having seen that. What I mean is, like, I didn't see it. It was a twist in the film that I was like, oh, interesting. Interesting.
All right, I'm intrigued.
What I'll say is, like, the end of the movie, when the final showdown is occurring, I was just like, oh, okay. All right, we've now gone into the Mary Sue territory a little bit in the conclusion to the movie. But I really had a good time with it, man. It's a fun B movie. It's a fun B movie. Yeah, its rental price wasn't the $19.99. I think I got this for $6.99. So I think it's worth the rental for you to check it out. But I'm going to be giving it a B-. So
okay.
But I had a lot of fun, and it's nice to see Chloe Grace Moretz back, you know? We know that she had stepped away from acting, but she's back. And in this, what I like is that she's playing an older character. Like, she's playing her age, essentially. Yeah. She's playing a young 20-something here.
Good, good, good.
You know, they're not doing the teenage, you know, model with her. You know, they're aging her up. But I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was also one of the things I want to say, like, I thought the score was pretty good, at least in the very beginning of the film. The score gets lost in a lot of the action that's going on. But one of the things that I really liked is for half of the movie, you're really just focused on her. It's her down
journey
in that thing. No, just her down in that turret. Her in that turret, and she's talking to people through the headset on the flight, and that's it. She does eventually get out of that. But I thought that was a nice plot device that really helped us get to know her character a little bit, and help us sell the lie of what's really going on. So I like that. It adds to the suspense. I also really liked the way the film was shot. I thought that it had a nice like, I don't know, almost like dreamscape like color palette to it, which is nice for like this fantasy World War II type film. So it's like it's like part World War II, you know, historical movie, part monster movie, and part, you know, woman empowerment movie. You know, so it nice. Balances it's
right up your alley.
Yeah, it balances its plates nicely, but it's not perfect by any means. So,
okay,
yeah, definitely I suggest checking
Very
it out.
Very cool.
All right, Jay, you got another one that you watched.
Yeah, so I caught Nomadland in IMAX in theaters.
You are one of those lucky people that can travel anywhere.
Yes, ma'am. I know.
And they sometimes call you nomads.
My mom said that you're homeless. Is that true?
No, I'm not homeless. I'm just
houseless.
Not the same thing, right?
No.
This one, I had a feeling that because it was shot in, or not shot in IMAX, but it was actually going to be displayed in IMAX, that this was going to be a beautiful landscape type film. And you could see that from the trailer.
I told you when I saw this trailer, I was like, this is built on the back of Frances McDormand, and that's all this is.
No, 100% is.
This is Frances McDormand.
I'm going to give it to you straight. There's no plot.
I know.
This is a slice of life movie following this woman from the post-recession, like 2011 time period. Her whole town got up and ended, completely upended, and the zip code got disappeared. They took it off. Like the whole town just.
I could tell from the trailer. I could tell from the trailer that this was no Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
No. It doesn't have that kind of energy level for sure. But this is solid, dude. This is one of the best movies I've seen in a long time, man.
This seems so boring to me.
This is what I was going to say about that.
There's no intrigue in it. Other than the personal conflict.
Despite my only flaw with it, with the pacing, naturally, it wasn't boring. You know, I just felt the pace being a little bit too long for what it was trying to accomplish, but I think at the same time,
let me get a little crass.
It was supposed to be that way.
At what point in Frances McDormand's career did you look at her and go, she could get it? Because it ain't now. It ain't now, that's for sure.
Wow. Yeah, she's
I go from talking
little,
about
she's a little, she's a little rough. She's
I got
rough.
To talk about a movie about woman empowerment to then talking
she,
about
she fits
where an actress
well.
Can get it. But I think for me it's Fargo. I love her in Fargo.
Yeah, she's fun in that.
And that's not a pregnancy kink. that's not a pregnancy kink.
Got it. All right.
I'm just trying to have a little bit of fun. I realized that we were probably talking about movies too heavily, and we weren't having enough levity in the show.
This one is it's a heavy movie.
It is a heavy movie.
I mean, but it is one of those things
people
where
losing their jobs, just trying to survive.
They
suck
they,
a dick on the corner. Frances McDormand suck
like
a dick on the
show.
Corner.
A lot of them, they choose to live this way. They want to be in their mind free, you know, completely off the grid. No sense of responsibilities to the society at all, you know, and just kind of be working from seasonal job to seasonal job around the Midwest, Southwest, you know, kind of area.
I want to break free.
It's 100% that. It's 100% that. And it really it asks a lot of questions, and it doesn't give you any kind of answers because, you know, she's offered opportunities and she chooses this path along with many other people, and you really get a nice character study, not just hers, other people. There's a lot of great little threads throughout this film, and it's definitely worth the watch. There's a lot of great things in it. You just, it's must.
But this is theaters only right now, right? Nomadland.
Temporarily. It's coming out very soon. I think this weekend or next weekend.
Amazon
it's
Prime,
gonna, it's
right?
going to be dropping. I can't remember the streaming service, but it will be dropping, I believe.
It's just not, yeah, it's just not for me. This is definitely, like, when I watched this trailer, I was like,
I'm looking forward to watching this again.
This is a J.
And it delivered. And I told you beforehand, I was a little worried that this could be the reverse. It could be very dull and boring and not work, or it could be a home run for me. And it was a home run. This is a solid A for me. I really love this movie. I dug it. I think it's something that it shines a light on Americans and a society that does not.
You still never answered at what point in her career would Frances McDormand have got it from you?
Probably still Fargo.
Yeah.
It probably would have been Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
That accent. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a little Fargo accent kink.
Oh, yeah.
oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Hey,
there.
Margie, you all right over there? Oh, yeah.
Hey, boy. Are you in yet?
Oh, yeah, you in there? Oh, yeah. I don't feel it.
Harder.
We
can't do accents.
We're growing big up here in North Dakota, yeah? Oh, yeah. Mine's awful, too. All right, Jay, final movie that I watched by myself before we get into our main review for Judas and the Black Messiah. I watched Psycho Gorman.
Many moons ago, a nameless evil was imprisoned in a place far beyond reach.
Hurry up!
If he were ever to be released, it would spell certain doom for all existence.
Is that fear I smell? Your planet will be torn to pieces, and I will
Mimi,
treat your
look.
Screams as I rip.
Is this yours?
Oh, my God.
The gem of Paraxidike. Whoever wields it is able to command me.
Go over there. And wait for us to come back in the morning.
You will suffer an eternity for this.
Bye! Mom, Dad, I want you to meet Psycho Gorman, or PG for short.
I will bathe in your blood.
Don't worry.
Be worried.
This is a Shudder original film. Not yet streaming on the Shudder channel, though, unfortunately. But it is a rental. You can pick it up on streaming services for rent. This is an absolute love letter to those 80s movies like Mac and Me and Monster Squad. And with the exception that it's practically unrated, it's rated R for gore, violence and language. It follows two little kids, brother and sister, who discover a intergalactic being of power who essentially is cast out from a GWAR music video. He is sustained by delivering death, destruction, and violence, but one of them is in possession of a gem that controls his actions, and they spend the entire movie essentially making Psycho Gorman their best friend. He goes around the town, he plays games with them, and at one point he turns one of their best friends, Alistair, into a brain, much like Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is batshit fucking insane. There's absolutely no way my co-host could ever watch this movie and get anything from it. You would watch this and go, what the fuck did you just make me watch?
Yeah.
This is bullshit.
No,
because it's a love letter to those 80s movies, but it also adds in this horrific twist to it. There's a lot of blood, there's a lot of guts, there's a lot of gore, and it's all done for grins, it's all done for fun. One of the things I loved is that so much of this movie is done in practical effects. Like, a lot of the intergalactic beings that you'll see throughout this film that are hunting Psycho Gorman, they look like they were too horrific to be Power Rangers villains, but they put them in here. You know what I mean? You remember, like, the Power Ranger villains?
Sure,
like Rita
sure.
Repulsa and stuff like that?
Yeah.
They were like these somewhat incredible, like, live action,
bigger than life, surreal, but yet still sort of grounded and
somewhat,
over the top.
Yeah, like a giant hammerhead shark, like punching a city
just
and
silly
stuff like that, until Megazord comes and knocks it out. But like, it kind of reminded me of that. Like, a lot of these characters,
like Chuck E. Cheese characters,
not like that. But it did. They all did remind me of, like, rejected villains from the Power Rangers TV series that we grew up with. So, you know, I love that aspect of it. It's, yeah. There's a lot of nostalgia that's baked into this new, fresh take on this type of movie. So it really impressed me with just how fucking insane it was. Hmm. There's no lesson in the movie. Like, that's what I love. There's no moral. There's no message. There's no lesson. I didn't learn shit from watching this. I just shut my brain off. I watched some heads get exploded. I watched some blood flow everywhere. And I watched some true irreverence for childhood completely splayed out in the movie. The main little girl is practically a sociopath, right? She has almost no empathy for anybody else but herself. It's kind of amazing in a way that like this film did so much to veer away from any type of message or moral or story of family togetherness. It was just like, nah, we bucked that system.
Damn.
We're just telling you the story of an intergalactic torture monger who was enslaved on Earth by a 10-year-old little girl whose favorite phrase is, "What the frig?" And she unleashed this monster on her town and on her family and eventually helped him save the galaxy, quote unquote.
Was this fun?
Oh, my God. So much fun.
All right.
Jay, for me, this is an A movie, man. Like Nomadland, that's your A movie?
Yeah.
This is my A movie.
All right.
This is my A movie. All right. Like, I don't even know how to explain, like, how batshit it is. Like, I can sit there and tell you, like, oh, Birds of Prey is a batshit movie. But there's a plot, you know, in a through line for that. There's a plot to this, too. But it just takes you on so many fun tangents that it doesn't even fucking matter.
Yeah.
Like, the plot is inconsequential to the fun that you're having going on screen.
Yeah, you're going to either be like me, like, and turn it off, or you're going to be like you and just
Guardians of the Galaxy. That's batshit. That's insane. It doesn't hold a candle. How fucking insane Psycho Goreman is.
Sure.
If you're someone who likes B cinema, C cinema, like if you like that type of stuff, if you know, this is right up your alley. There's no movie that I can compare this to. I can't look at it there. It's just a
rewatchability, all that good stuff.
Oh my God! Yeah. When I finished it, I told Lauren, I was like, we're buying this.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, really? And I was like, I'm buying it. She's like, why? And I was like, because this is the type of movie that, like, when I've had like a really bad day, I'm going to shut my brain off. This has got.
It's going to put you in a good mood.
This has cult classic written.
Damn.
All over it.
Listen.
All over it.
You heard it here first,
all
folks.
Over it. Super it's already out there. It's already out there. Just search Psycho Goreman on Twitter or Instagram. You're going to see tons of posts of people lavishing this thing with praise. Like, the horror community loves this. Like, we're fucking nuts for it. Go listen to Epic Film Guys talk about it. You know, like the, Justin and Loy Sauce over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just completely irreverent and it's just so much fun. I fucking loved it. Every minute of watching this, I just drank.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. All right, Jay, we got one final movie to talk about.
Yes.
We both watched Judas and the Black Messiah.
Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton of the Illinois Black Panther Party.
Repeat after me.
Looking at 18 months for the stolen car, 5 years for impersonating a federal officer, or you can go home.
The Black Panthers are forming a rainbow coalition of oppressed brothers and sisters of every color.
Their aim is to sow hatred and inspire terror.
I will learn all that I can.
These ain't no terrorists.
You can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation. You can murder a revolutionary, but you can't murder revolution. And you can murder a freedom fighter, but you can't murder freedom.
All right, so this movie follows Lakeith Stanfield's character of Bill O'Neill as he is entrapped by the FBI and is forced to infiltrate the Black Panther movement that is led by one Fred Hampton, who is played by Daniel Kaluuya.
First, he was he chose this path, David, because he could have been a man and went to jail and served his 6 years in jail, but he had a choice, Dave. And he was indifferent within the political times right now. And you could tell that he was a good actor because he was selling himself as some false, as a FBI agent and stealing cars, you know, and he got fucking arrested. And this is how
he could either serve his time in jail or
he was going to serve his time being an informant
or
for the FBI,
or he could be an informant for the FBI, join the Black Panthers and essentially feed information on Fred Hampton, who played by Daniel Kaluuya. That's the best I'm going to get at that is Daniel Kaluuya.
Just Kaluuya.
It's Kaluuya.
Yeah.
I had it right the first time.
Yeah.
Damn. I overthought it.
Yeah.
I overthought it. But anyway, both of these two actors, the two main parts in this, Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya, they are two of the best actors in the business right now, young, up and coming. I don't even want to say up and coming
they're
anymore.
Just so solid. No, they're not even up and coming
anymore.
They're established.
They both broke the mold.
And they were so perfectly cast.
Trying to think of a movie that was almost as batshit as Psycho Goreman was. Sorry to bother you.
Yeah,
except that had a message in the end.
That was pretty wild.
I loved it, but that movie was fucking nuts.
That was nuts.
That was a nuts movie.
That was nuts.
Sorry, but anyway,
I like the projects that both these guys choose. You know, they really are delivering it.
And we use like I think like as like people who review movies and stuff like that, we talk about things like we always use words like amazing and prolific and stuff like that and up and coming, and it's like the performances in this movie are literally amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is what it does. It solidifies the fact that we are seeing two, and let's not forget Jesse Plemons, understated performances, I'll say that. But regardless, three long-term heavyweight actors that we're going to be seeing for long, long time that are going to be around.
One of the things I love about Jesse Plemons' character of Agent Roy Mitchell is that he is the handler for Lakeith Stanfield's character of Bill O'Neill. There's conflict there.
There is.
At one point.
I feel like it's a little underwritten to some degree.
It was. But there's conflict.
But there's a scene where you get it. And you understand where his position is, and you can see in a couple scenes
he doesn't like what he's doing.
Right, right. He's doing what he's.
But he's also being praised by his boss for doing it, who's played by Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen is playing
Herbert, J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah,
yeah. We didn't get into.
You wouldn't even be able to tell.
We didn't even get into the cross dressing, but I would have loved the scene.
Mm, just one.
One scene of Martin Sheen wearing pumps.
Yeah.
Looking in the mirror, it's been like, damn fine. They look damn fine. How's it going with turning those guys, those black guys, against the Black Panthers? Is it going well? You know, it was essentially like the Departed, in a way.
It was,
but it took
and
a step further, and it added so much more to the story. Given our current political climate and the political climate of the late 1960s, early 1970s, and to the same. Struggle that
funny enough, that was director Shaka King's pitch.
Yeah,
she wanted to make
the Black Departed.
Departed for this time period.
Yeah,
but she didn't, you know, secretly say that this was the story that she wanted to tell.
But it
that
was
the pitch.
But it was though,
because that was a great pitch. You know, like,
it's a great pitch.
Yeah, because this is the specific story that she wanted to tell within that period of time. You know, and that message and the story, the political message throughout the country. And this is a real story, you know, Bill O'Neill and
They make a very clear point in the beginning of the film. Like, it doesn't, I forget what it says, but it's not based on a true story. It says based on actual events or something like that. You know, it's something that alludes to it's different than just based on a true story.
Yeah.
There is fiction in this story. A lot of this is fiction because most of what Bill O'Neill did was sealed by the FBI. And all we know about it is what came forth during the 12-year civil trial that occurred at the end of it, which is just a footnote at the end of this movie.
Yep.
And Bill O'Neill, you know, was not very talkative about his experience of infiltrating the Black Panthers, being a confidential informant for the FBI. He did one interview on the topic, and that was it.
Well, shame. And you can see it progress throughout this film and the guilt. And, you know, I think this happens all the time with informants.
There's
endless informants out there in the world. And guess what? You don't hear about them because, one, they either get killed, they go to jail, they get, you know,
something
always happens because you're rarely strong enough to come out the other side and live.
Definitely a moment life. where you know, Lakeith Stanfield's character kind of like pulls up and he's like, I got all this bombing material. Let's just blow it up. You know what I mean? And we're not saying what or when or how or who.
Right.
And everyone's like, no, that's not who we are. And blah, blah, blah. And he was sent there by the FBI. But there is a moment of truth that I feel from Lakeith Stanfield where I was like, he's angry at the government for putting him in this position. And in a way, he does kind of just want to blow it up.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
He's angry. Yeah. Because as
he's angry, he's frustrated. He's, you know, he's made stressed.
He's made this decision long ago. He doesn't want to go to prison and stuff like that. He doesn't, but he also doesn't want to be in a position that he's in anymore because he is part of this movement. In his mind, he's a part of the Black Panther movement.
Yeah.
He's part of this rainbow coalition.
And he technically is.
Which is one of the things that I thought was fantastic about the film, because Fred Hampton wasn't just, you know, the head of the Black Panther Party, you know, at this time.
Mm-hmm.
He was also part of the Rainbow Coalition, which brought in white trash people. It brought in
and you see a scene of that.
It brought in the Latin Kings. It brought in a lot of other organizations at the time that some may label as gangs, and maybe they were gangs, but they were also political movements as well.
Sure.
And in their mind, they were all just fighting for their neighborhoods, and they were all just fighting for equality, and it's showing us that. And to the FBI, all these people that were shades darker than white or were white trash were stirring up too much trouble. And one of the things that I found interesting was they mention Seal.
Mm-hmm.
And they show pictures of him gagged and tied up during his trial in Chicago. And me and you just talked about, the trial of the Chicago 7. So
this character was sprinkled in.
Yeah.
In that movie as well.
Yeah. I wouldn't have.
I know. I agree.
Wouldn't have made that connection because it's just, let's face it, as two white guys, you know, while we are here in February talking about Black History Month, this is not the Black history that gets taught to us.
No.
Martin Luther King.
As it should, though.
A few footnotes of Malcolm X.
And it's what's so beautiful about this.
Right.
This past year, you've really seen some great stuff.
But if you think about it, what did we learn as white kids growing up in white suburbia about Black History Month? John Washington Carver gave us peanut butter. Rosa Parks refused to sit in the back of a bus.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King gave a speech and was killed for it. Like that's the shit that we learn. We don't actually get to see stories about.
You don't feel it. You don't.
Right.
You don't emotionally get it. You don't get into the details.
We get movies like Selma and stuff like that, but they still surround those historical figures and stuff like that. Or we get the pandering stories like Green Book.
Mm.
We don't get real visceral stories about the struggle of the Black rights movement that's been going on, you know, the civil rights movement has been going on forever in this country.
Right.
It feels like this.
Still going.
It's rare. We got one earlier in the year. We got it with One Night in Miami. But the conversations that are going on in that movie are the same. We're missing that heart racing, you know,
Visceral experience of it happening
right
before your eyes, within your community, within your home.
In One Night in Miami, watching a conversation around this stuff happening is, while it's interesting and it's a different viewpoint on a topic that I've never gotten.
It's broad, but guess what? It's just a conversation. You're not living it. You're not seeing it on screen. You're not breathing the story.
But it's different when I'm watching Lakeith Stanfield go into the Black Panthers building, make a suggestion for them to do something almost feeling like he's getting caught and then coming out and taking that big breath, that sigh of relief. And it's like, holy shit, like he was almost dead. And it is a lot like The Departed, where like I felt that for Leonardo DiCaprio's character the whole time. I thought that this movie was suspenseful as fuck. But what I really took away from it was that Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya are going to be around for a very long fucking time.
Yeah. And, I was very happy with the performances, number one. I think there's a lot of great cinematography and directing choices, even though it does get long and the pacing is a little off. But I do like how they really try to strip down the element and actually have a good amount of time showcasing a love story. And you know, really just kind of bring in the heartbeat of the story to the characters themselves. Like, these are people, you know, and they had families and lives, and they had a vision, they had a dream, you know, equality and everything. And, you know, this is what was happening to them,
yeah,
you know, and this was their viewpoint of it all.
The final scenes are tough to watch. I'll say that
it is.
They don't hold back. And I got to watch your face while watching it. It's haunting and stuff like that, but it also, it perfectly encompasses what was going on at the time and what is still going on now. And I really enjoyed this movie. I thought that as far as acting performances go, it was fucking phenomenal. As far as a script goes, as far as suspense, it's fucking phenomenal. I do think it is a little slow paced. It is a little to get into it, but all character pieces tend to be that way.
And very long footnotes, everybody. Just so you know, just stay tuned for that, because there's going to be a lot of dialogue to read up on.
5 minutes at the end of the film is all like, where do we all end up? Like, what did this all mean in the end? Which I'm not always a big fan of. I always prefer showing that stuff. But this film had a pretty long runtime to begin with. It's about 2 hours. And I'm not saying crazy long.
A little over two. It's heart-wrenching. But, you know,
you would need to tack on an hour of the movie to get to what they put into the footnotes and stuff like that at the end of this movie. But I really enjoyed this movie. Other than its pacing issues, like, I thought its score was fucking great. Like, I loved the score. Like, I listening to it, like, playing underneath like a lot of these scenes was, you know, there was an upbeat nature to it, but it was also like very jazzy, but also like suspenseful at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so I watched this last 30 to 40 minutes remotely.
Yeah.
And I think that might have took away my flow, unfortunately. But I mean, it's not like I'm giving it a bad grade or anything like that. I'm giving it a B+. Yeah, there was just some. I think there was just some.
Yeah.
Just the filmmaking quality issues that I think as a film structure as a whole, it didn't quite hit me into like an A level kind of category, even though so much of it was fantastic.
I'm at an A- on it because I felt like we could have done more with the FBI. We could have shown a little bit more of that aspect of it.
Sure.
I thought that we could have done more to, you know, they're villains, don't get me wrong.
But more conflict from their point of view.
More conflict from their point of view, exactly.
From the quote-unquote pigs that
exactly.
you hear.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Throughout the film. Yeah, I know.
You know, we focus so much on the story of the Black Panther movement and stuff like that. I don't think we focused enough on what they were fighting against. You know what I mean? Even though we know exactly what they're fighting against.
And I understand that this is not the story that the filmmaker was trying to make.
It was not.
They really wanted to humanize the people within the story.
And they did a great job
showcased
at that.
And showcased the confliction.
They set out to do it.
That O'Neill
set out to do that.
Yeah.
And they did that.
And they did that. I don't blame what Shaka King did at all as a choices as a filmmaker. I mean, I think it was fantastic, but I just think for me as a whole, it just didn't hit me. Now, maybe as a rewatch, if I saw it from start to finish at my house, you know, maybe it would hit me a little stronger into an A category. But as of right now, B plus. Yeah,
for sure.
It definitely is worth a watch.
It's on HBO Max. Yep. So if definitely you have HBO Max, it's
a lot better than the little things.
It's a lot better than the little things. So we're definitely going to want to check that out. But Jay, we got some news to get into. This is a very long, what are you watching? But we do have to get into this week's news. All right, let's just get through this one real quick, this first news story. We all know me and Jay are a little behind the eight ball on this. Gina Carano fired from The Mandalorian, but also fired from Rangers of the New Republic, which what I found was interesting that based on some of her anti-mask tweets and some of her tweets previously that she was putting out were the reason that Disney during their Investors Day announced Rangers of the New Republic, but did not announce that Gina Carano was the star of it. They actually were going to announce her as the star, but because of some of her previous tweets and because of some of her previous political viewpoints that she's so happy to share on social media, they decided to wait and see how things turned out for her before they announced her as the star of that TV show. Lo and behold, she goes out and starts making some anti-Semitic tweets. Those anti-Semitic tweets have been deleted by her. However, they basically talked about her and her political beliefs and those who share her political beliefs being that are akin to Jews in the Nazi regime. And that's just not true. That's just not the same. It's not one for one. It's not apples and apples. It's apples and oranges.
Yes.
That is dumb. To make that connection. Sorry.
That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard, you imbecile.
It's almost as if she was trying to do this on purpose. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
That's a ridiculous statement. It's a ridiculous standpoint to make. However, as we sit here at a time where people like Armie Hammer, Shia LaBeouf, and Marilyn Manson have all essentially committed crimes against women. And against people, some of it proven, and the backlash towards them maybe just desserts. We have someone who is essentially stating their political beliefs on a public platform that does not align with the political beliefs of the company that they work for,
a lot of hate speech.
It is a lot of hate speech. No, it's definitely a lot of hate speech. And
it's no different than
here's the thing. I am for her being released from these series and being released from Lucasfilm and doing that stuff. I'm all for that.
It's essentially verbal abuse. It's abuse is abuse, you know.
But I didn't. You're right. But I didn't care about her character. You know what I mean?
Well, I definitely didn't. I thought she was fine, but I think she could be easily recast.
And that's where it seems they're going. It looks like they will be looking to recast the character instead of just writing the character out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if Disney was like, we're trying to just separate the artist from the artist, we don't agree with her political. If they made a statement and just said, we don't agree with her political views or anything like that, I would have been like, whatever. You know, I could see both sides of the coin here. I understand that essentially she is now taking to social media and she's asking people to fight for her, to keep her in The Mandalorian and stuff like that.
Oh, she is. I thought she said fuck it.
No, she did say fuck it because she does have a lot of irons in the fire now as a result of this. A lot of like right-wing media coming to her aid now.
Of course.
Well, we'll put you in this. We'll put you in that.
Well, freedom of speech, you know.
Exactly. And part of me is just like, freedom of speech. When does freedom of speech end? You know where it ends? It ends when you're employed by a company who asked you not to do that. That's where it ends.
Sure.
You're free to say whatever you want. However, the consequences are still yours to deal with.
You work for a company. They are outlining the job responsibilities.
They spent 3 years trying to become an inclusionary company to show more diversity on their screen.
Nobody's forcing you to say all this stuff on Twitter and social media for the whole world to see.
Right. And the fact
have your viewpoints. Delete social media. Boom.
And that's and that's
it
would have
corrected everything.
That's the thing. You know, a lot of people are like, she's being persecuted for her freedom of speech and the First Amendment and all this shit and stuff like that. And it's like, but in the end, I can still be fired from my company that I work for currently for saying shit.
And so can those politicians or Fox News media.
If for some reason you and I said something that got us into hot water, if enough people listen to this show to get us into hot water, Age of Radio could be like, we're dropping you from this network. And we can't say boo about it.
Yeah. It'll probably happen one day. But you know.
probably my Francis McDermott rant. We'll probably get it. But no.
That's
like,
PG.
That's PG for us. when it all comes down to it, it's not that you have to share the political viewpoints of the people you work for, but at the same time, they have the right to not employ you for what you say publicly. So, you know, as the First Amendment goes, you can say whatever the fuck you want in this country and not be persecuted for it by the law, legally.
Yeah.
But this is out of the court. This is out of state court. This is out of federal court. You can be held responsible for the things you said by the court of common opinion and by the court of your employer and what they want to portray for themselves. And in that reason, when I see her go, I go, whatever. Now, can we please just get Xena Warrior Princess to take her place? Lucy Lawless. Like that's who I want to replace her. I want Lucy Lawless.
Oh, okay.
I love Lucy Lawless.
Yeah, yeah.
I think she's fantastic. One of my favorite characters in Ash versus the Evil Dead. So I think Lucy Lawless is fantastic, and a lot of people are calling for her to replace her. I don't know what Disney is going to wind up doing with the character, whether they'll just write the character out, which is just as easy as recasting the character. But either way, I'm fine with it.
No, it'll be good stuff. I'm happy that this is just going to get moved on. Oh, hopefully it's going to move on. I don't want to be seeing shit in the headlines like, you know, a court date fucking thing or any kind of bullshit like that. I just want everybody to move on, please.
Yes. Next news story. RJ, Jack Black has been tasked to lend the voice to Claptrap.
I sound pleased about this. It's only because my programmers made this my default tone of voice. I'm actually quite depressed.
The lovable robot from the Borderlands series of games, which is now being adapted into films. It seems like we are getting a whole lot more, you know, movies adapted from video games. And what I love is that it seems like they're going to be far better. It seems like video games are now getting... they're now getting the love that they should from studios.
I'm liking what I'm seeing with Mortal Kombat. So. Right.
And this has a stellar cast so far. Cate Blanchett, Jamie Lee Curtis, Jack Black, and Kevin Hart.
Damn.
Right. With Eli Roth directing Borderlands.
Yeah. That's the biggest question mark.
Right. I just
Eli is gosh,
how far do you let you Jack Black go though?
Can't trust him.
Like where does Jack like?
Yeah, but because Jack, if you know the character, Jack is a little bit more restrained.
It's true, he can be. However, his nowadays, TikTok videos like, of him as Thor running around in the red underwear,
that's good stuff.
Fucking hilarious.
That is good stuff.
But you know, are we going to get the I want to rock? Are we going to get like that?
I don't think so.
Jack Black,
maybe. Because
Claptrap is a far more like reserved character, right? Like he very much has, you know, little quips to you in Borderlands 2 when you start playing and stuff like that. It's
I want to see him
truly
just
a hilarious character.
I want to see him play like the dry humor type thing. Like
I thought Peter Dinklage was perfect for this.
Okay,
but then they announced Jack Black and I went maybe.
We'll see. I think he'll hit it.
Yeah.
I think he will.
But either way, Borderlands will be coming out. There is no release date for it.
Yeah. But anything with Cate Blanchett, come on.
But I love the idea of you know, Hollywood taking video game series, you know, seriously as adapted for films. And we're going to see Uncharted long before we see this.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll see the Last of Us movie could probably come out even before this as well. Next news story. RJ, your wishes have been heard, because when we just replayed the episode for our top five movie weapons and Caster Troy's gold plated pistols.
Oh yes.
Were on your list.
Goddamn right they were.
Just after
sexiest motherfuckers.
This is us putting it out into the universe and it coming back to us.
This is how powerful our podcast is.
This is how powerful we are. It's the power of the mind. Because Face Off is getting a sequel.
Goddamn. Fuck yeah. It's a sequel, not even a reboot.
And it's going to be directed by Godzilla vs. Kong director Adam Wingard. So,
interesting. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but this is a sequel. John Travolta, Nicolas Cage, return.
Dude.
For a sequel. Now,
this is
going to
be so bad.
I can't wait
to watch it.
That's what's going to be brilliant about it. It's going to be 20 some years removed.
It's going to be so bad, but so good.
So it's going to do it's going to pay homage to the original also paying homage to our nostalgia, while also recognizing that that was a film that took itself far too seriously, and it's going to take it to a different level.
Yeah.
At least this is the potential that it has, is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It's so funny too, because like back then, like, I went with the whole seriousness of it all. But it's like, as an adult, like, I can see how, like,
Jay is like,
insane it was.
Jay's like, theaters, day one.
But it was sick.
Just so I can see those golden pistols again.
Oh, God.
But let's face it, we just did a Patreon episode on the top five Nicolas Cage freakouts. We want to add to that list.
But it wasn't just the goldenness. It was like the way it was in the holster in the back, sitting perfectly side by side like that. Oh, it was just the coolest.
My favorite part of this movie is...
I can relate. Yeah.
My favorite part of this movie is when he's a priest in the very beginning, and he gets up behind the choir girl and he grabs her ass. Hallelujah! 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 And like he goes, and he's like, he's in his abbot robe and he's like spinning his head and his face is all insane.
Oh,
I fucking
God.
Love it. I can't wait to see Castor Troy return with Nicolas Cage's face.
The best. I can't wait.
Next news story. All right, Jay, here's someone no one's ever talked about in a while. Even us who live in the Philadelphia area, because he does live near us. Bam Margera has been cut from Jackass 4, according to him and himself. So he has taken to social media and he's said, "Who the fuck cares if I'm drunk as hell anymore? Jackass has put me through hell on fucking wheels for a year and a half," Margera said. "I wrote them so many ideas, and if I'm not in the movie and they use my ideas, how do you think that'll make me feel? The last thing I want to do is be in a courtroom with Jeff Tremaine, the director of the Jackass films." He's like, "I love him, but fuck, man, I'm not in Jackass 4. If anybody cares about me, don't go see their movie, because I will make mine way fucking radder if you just Venmo me $1.
Money, please.
So this entire rant just comes down to him just like asking for money. But essentially what it seems like is he's been released from the film as a result of him having to take multiple drug tests, urine tests, breathalyzer tests, all while on the set of the film.
Mm.
And his drug struggles have been pretty well documented on his Instagram and his Instagram stories and stuff like that.
He's the last of the jackasses who hasn't stopped his party boy ways.
Not to mention, it's not even party boy ways. He is sick. I believe he has admitted to having bipolar disorder.
Well, this
which
is true.
Is often comorbid with substance dependency.
Mm.
And he really states that he's tried to get help before and he comes back and then he goes away again and falls back into addiction.
And especially when you're hanging out in the town of L.A.
Right.
Where... you can just get around and do whatever the hell you want. Well, but also, no, I mean, I've literally been in the bar with him. I mean, I've seen him hanging out, I mean, in Doylestown, but...
He attributes a lot of this to the fact that he does have long-lasting pain from some of the stunts he's performed throughout the Jackass films.
Sure.
But also the death of one of his best friends, Ryan Dunn. You know, so it's... Look, can you fault Paramount for releasing what essentially is a train wreck? Look, I don't wish ill on anybody, especially anyone dealing with substance abuse issues, because it is a disease.
Yeah.
I want to see Bam Margera get help, but I don't think being in the Jackass movie and putting his body through that pain is what is needed to help him with his substance abuse issues.
Yeah, this is one of those things
I think it's
where
the right call on Paramount's part.
I think it had to be done. You know, I think it's just one of those things where I think enough is enough.
In fact, the mistake that Paramount did was allowing him on set to begin with, was hiring him to begin with. Because
that's where I'm getting at.
It's been a very public downward spiral.
I think it was one of those things where, you know, I'm sure they knew what they were getting into going into it. However, they had a lot of push from the other cast members and people behind the scenes within the production company wanting to keep the cast members together for these kind of films and keep it continuity going.
Sure.
But if he's in peak level craziness right now, like you can't do a movie. You're not going to be able to. How are you going to do a press tour? You know, he's just going to be off the rails. And it's not even going to be marketable. You know, you have to be still in a fucking professional adult, you know, to some degree. And if you're not, you can't play. And that's it. And that's what they did. That takes a lot. For Paramount to do this, I would think.
They're essentially releasing one of the three temple stars.
This shows how bad he is.
Think about
Jackass.
He
must have been doing crazy shit.
Think
for
about Jackass.
Multiple periods of time,
and you think of Johnny Knoxville, Steve-O, and Bam Margera.
But even over the years, Dave, of them literally, even in their throes of all of them fucking up and doing shit, they still made these films. They still released them. Paramount didn't give them any
different
shit.
Climate now than even when Jackass 3.
I understand. However, you know, and Christ, you're almost like, you know, 40, 50 years old now. But it's time. You got to move on. I'm fine with it.
Just get hurt on camera, make us laugh, and please don't put...
You're wasting everybody's time if you're just going to be an idiot.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Just do the best product that you can, and having someone who's a loose cannon that could possibly also get someone else hurt on set.
And that's a big part of it, too.
Is not
insurance
something
purposes,
that we need.
Yeah.
Next news story. All right, man. Disney CEO Bob Chapek has confirmed, he's said it in interviews now, that Black Widow has no plans. They got no plans for Black Widow to be released on any streaming platform.
Yeah.
Unless Raya and the Last Dragon does fucking gangbusters on Disney Plus, in which case, then probably then.
I don't love it, Dave. I don't love it. I mean, at this point, more and more, I feel like...
Doesn't it feel like Marvel's just taking their toys and gone home? Because, I mean, I know we're getting WandaVision and we're going to be getting Falcon and Winter Soldier, but it feels like all these movies that are part of this phase four that WandaVision's fucking kicking off, it kind of feels like Marvel's like, we gave you a test, now we're taking my toys and I'm fucking going home.
There's that, but I feel like they're doing these products a disservice in a lot of ways for throwing it into the pack of wolves of all this other content that's going to be coming out the same time.
Also, the hype is cooling, right? Like
that too.
I read this news story
this thing was supposed to come out last spring, right? I don't care anymore. I've been seeing this. I just saw the trailer before, I think Nomadland or something like that. I did. No, right before Nomadland in IMAX.
Right. We've now cut two trailers for it. By the time the movie comes out, they'll be on trailer 6 and TV spot 97.
This movie, you know, just be ballsy. Put it out on Disney Plus. You know what great marketing is? Cut your price. Cut your price to like $10 or something like that or whatever. You know, it'll be great marketing.
If you put Black Widow
in theaters as well. So in theaters, Disney Plus, same day and date.
We already talked about this. If you put it as $30 on Disney Plus because it's an MCU film and you get out there and you get the message of what a tentpole film this is for phase four, people will pay the $30 to watch it at home and they'll pay to go to the theaters to see it same time.
My point is insurance, good marketing, get people jazzed up. Oh, discount.
I like that you're on my side because previously you've been like, no, Marvel should.
Yeah, but this is. It's
been too long.
It depends on the property.
It's been too long.
It depends on the film, and I think this is the kind of film that warrants.
The lava has gone down the hill.
The
on
option
us.
Of
this
both.
Thing was this thing was white hot. We were all ready for it, and now the lava's hit the ocean and it's cooled, and it's making itself into something.
This better be one hell of a film. That's all I gotta say.
Right, it better fucking kill it. But all the Marvel films have been delayed as a result of
the pandemic.
But
this is the one where like. There's no excuse.
It seems like everyone else is shifting and pivoting to move along with it and doing what they can to make money. And Disney is just like, no, you will see the MCU in theaters. Damn it.
I mean,
you will. Okay. Next news story. Speaking of this, John Carpenter has taken to social media and has said that he believes that the Halloween movies could be released on streaming services. Two Halloween films that are going to be that are going to be shot. We obviously have Halloween Kills, which is going to be coming out, was supposed to come out this past October, but was delayed and is not coming out until 2021 now, but which it still may be delayed again. John Carpenter's pretty much saying, let's just put it out. And I think that's kind of the place Disney needs to be as well for Black Widow. Next news story. But Disney hasn't rested on their laurels, because they are continuing to cast people and continue the production of the MCU films, as they just recently cast Zawe Ashton as the main villain in Captain Marvel 2.
Mm.
A lot of rumors on who she could be playing, whether it's Moonstone or whether it's Valentine, a rich woman who is essentially, she outs Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel and stuff like that, her secret identity. In the film, she doesn't have a secret identity. Who knows? It could be amalgamation of multiple Carol Danvers villains. But
I've seen her in a couple things. I kind of like her.
Yeah. Velvet Buzzsaw is what they're touting that she's most renowned for. So, look, whatever. You know, she seems like a solid actress. She was
Amy Adams' assistant in Nocturnal Animals as well.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's just one of those things where...
solid actress. Let's see what she does with it. Let's see what the villain is.
She's new. It's a big breakout for her.
As anything with any role, I want to see that person in that role in a trailer or something like that. I wasn't sold on Ben Mendelsohn as, even in trailers, you know, as the quote unquote main villain for Captain Marvel until we saw him. And I was like,
and it seems like they're poising him as this like quirky little character that's going to be bouncing in and out of different films from time to time.
But what a turn for Ben Mendelsohn.
I know.
To play this comedic relief character. It's so different for him, but it fits so well.
It does.
I love it. I love it. So I do look forward to this.
I love him. He's
I look forward to Captain Marvel 2, even though I was not wowed by Captain Marvel 1.
Huge disappointment for me.
I think in the MCU and in Disney, they always seem to get things more right the second time around. So
no, not Thor, but...
No, it was the third time around for that one.
Third time for that one.
Next news story. All right, Jay. Mission Impossible. Previously, that was a movie that was being shot... back to back, Mission Impossible 7 and 8. Well, no longer. Mission Impossible 7 will be wrapping up its filming schedule shortly, and Tom Cruise will not have time to start filming Mission Impossible 8 because he's going to have to go out and start doing press for Maverick. So,
The longevity of these shoots, obviously, because of the pandemic and delays. And, you know, the time consuming aspect of the press tour. It makes sense. It is what it is. It's unfortunate. I'm okay with it. It's fine. Whatever. I mean, I would assume, I would be shocked if they filmed this eighth film this year at some point. I think it would be delayed until 2022.
I also think they want to see how the film market is.
Maybe.
The time 7 comes out. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's clearly, I think the pandemic's going to leave a gaping wound that could possibly never be stitched back together.
Possibly, but I mean, even still, this film's not coming out until 2022 anyway.
Right.
Number 7, I mean.
But either way, it seems like, you know, we were going to be getting back-to-back Mission Impossible movies in 22 and then in 23.
Mm.
We might be waiting until 24, 25 for that other one to come out, which is Tom Cruise getting 3 years older. But you know what? He's found that Scientology fountain of youth, he's good. Dianetics is doing him well. Next news story. RJ, how do you feel about one of your favorite films as a child coming back?
Mm.
Batman 89. And I'm not just talking about Michael Keaton.
Okay.
You know, reprising the role of Batman in the Flash movie. What I'm talking about is the 89 Batman universe being brought back, but on the page. Would you read a comic book if it takes place in the Batman 1989 universe?
Hubba, hubba, hubba. Money, money, money. Who do you trust?
Wow.
Also, with concept art,
because that is such a unique writing style too.
Concept art of Billy Dee Williams as a Two-Face. Are you interested in that? Would you like to know more?
Do tell.
So DC is going to be releasing two digital comic books. It'll be the Batman 1989 universe and Superman 1978. both of them will be getting digital releases. And then after 6 months, they will release hardback and paperback editions of it for you to purchase.
Wow.
And
wow.
This is actually an idea that was pitched quite some time ago, about 2 to 3 years ago.
Well, with Keaton coming back, I mean, this is the time.
It was pitched about 2 to 3 years ago by the artist of the Batman 1989, and it was ultimately turned down by DC, but now it's been given a green light for it to come back, and they're bringing Superman 78 along with it. So you're going to have Keaton-inspired Batman.
It's a really cool idea that's affordable for the studio, and if you have somebody who really understands the tone that it has to be in.
Here's the thing. People who are writing comic books and drawing comic books right now are you and me. They're our age. They grew up with the same stuff we grew up with. Their influences are the same.
Yeah, you're right.
So their reverence for it is the same that you and I would have doing it. We just don't have the talent to do it, but they do.
Got it.
I'm extremely excited for these series.
I am too.
I can't wait for this.
This might be the first comic book movie or a comic book that I'll ever watch.
I'm going to buy it.
Or read it. Whatever. How do you call it? Read it? Do you read a comic book?
Do you read it? Yes.
Do you watch it? What do you do?
If you're like me, you read it and then you go back through and
I'm gonna get slaughtered on Twitter for this.
No,
statement.
No, everyone.
How
reads
do you read?
Everybody reads comic books differently, you know. Okay. But the way I read them is I go through it, I read the story and stuff like that. I read the dialogue that's written out there, and then I get to the end and then I flip back through and then I go back through and I appreciate the art and stuff like that.
But you do it art at the same time, so you just sort of like meander through the page with the stories, the photos.
I'm usually looking at the art.
You get
the
story gist, and then you just kind of sprinkle through the photo art design and enjoy that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, in detail. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, especially if there's like a big splash page or something like that. Like, I may have read through it and I may have like been like, man, that's really cool. And I might go back and I might look at it. I might look at more of the details in the art. Mm. That's like really makes it cool. And I think for something like 89 Batman, where there's going to be probably a lot of like in-universe gags and stuff possibly in the background, little Easter eggs and stuff, I might have more fun going back through
it. I would think so.
So
yeah.
I really look forward to this. It's not often we talk about comic books on the show, but I'm a big comic book nerd, big comic book fan. So I really do look forward to this. I just love Batman 89 coming back in twofold now. Keaton possibly coming back in the Flash movie, and now
it's
here
exciting
with this. And next news story. All right, Jay, final news story, and I just want to do like a brief hot take on this, if you will. Apparently, Rian Johnson has done an interview with Arthur Soraya Wilson in which he said, no, I'm still making a trilogy of Star Wars films. That's still on the table.
Liar!
Yep. Yep. She
cool.
She tweeted out, I'm just going to post this now because I can see that I'm going to get a lot of requests for this. Yes, Rian Johnson's Star Wars trilogy is still on. No dates or timeline because he has other projects that are going on currently, but it is still happening. That is all I know about it, in all caps. And that's it. She did an interview with him, and that's apparently all she knows. And Rian Johnson has said that his Star Wars trilogy is still a go. Now for my hot take. Rian Johnson made the best film in the sequel trilogy. There, I said it.
Amazing. Every word of what you just said was wrong.
I know Star Wars fans want to take hot takes on that or want to take that and they want to ram my face into the ground, drag it across the concrete going 60 miles an hour, you know, stripping the flesh from my face and destroying me and killing me.
They do. A lot of people do.
A lot of people hate that movie because it ruined Luke Skywalker. It destroyed that character. Here's the thing. Luke Skywalker went from farm boy to Jedi Knight in a blink of a fucking eye. Motherfucker didn't know what failure felt like. Motherfucker gets a taste of failure. And he suddenly becomes a grown-ass man. And you know how I deal with failure? I go, and I hide, and I drink. So when I saw Luke Skywalker getting a taste of failure, and he goes to a remote planet to be alone and to drink green milk from some weird fucking space seal,
yeah.
I go, yeah, fucking A.
I can relate.
Fucking A. That's what I would fucking do.
Yeah.
I can relate.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I watched that, and I was just like, why does a hero have to be a hero forever? When the old saying is that a hero is made in moments, 1 to 2 moments. That's what makes a hero, making that decision to do something in that moment. And Luke Skywalker did that. Why is he held up to the standard to be a hero the entire rest of his fucking life? Why does he? Why does he have to be flawless?
It's such a conversation.
I like the idea that my main character was flawed. I have plenty of problems with the sequel trilogy. Don't get me wrong. Plenty of problems with Rey. Plenty of problems with Kylo. Plenty of problems with how they treated the character of Finn. How they treated the character of Poe. I think that there was rewrites out of rewrites out of rewrites, and my problem is with Rise of Skywalker more so than it is with any other film in this series.
Right.
But in the end, like, I look at Luke Skywalker and him feeling failure for the first time in his life and taking it extremely hard, and I go, like, yeah, failure is fucking hard, and we fall and we stumble. But in the end, Luke Skywalker didn't turn his back on everything and say, no, that's not who I am anymore. Go fucking fix it yourself, Rey. He fucking did what he had to do, and he showed up for the final battle, and
he did,
and he sacrificed himself for the ultimate cause, and he became the hero again.
Yeah.
I think what's harder than stepping up and being the hero once is fucking doing it again after you failed so fucking hard. That's why I fucking love that movie. But also, I love that movie because that movie does such a fantastic job of taking everything that Star Wars has done, and it does tear it down to its core. But it doesn't rip its core out. And then it tries to rebuild it on that core. And it ends with little fucking broom boy, man. Little fucking broom boy.
I was going to bring that up.
And
I
it's
love
such a
broom
passing
boy.
Of the torch of not just of not just that story, of not just the power of the Force, but also the power of that fandom where you're passing it on to the next fucking generation.
It was perfect. It was a perfect ending.
So as someone who's a father who has children to pass this on to, I watched The Last Skywalker and I go, fucking A. Because it doesn't have to be my Star Wars for fucking ever. At some point, it's going to be their Star Wars. And I can either take the ride with it, like Rian Johnson wanted me to do, or I can jump the fuck off and I can take the social media and I can tear it down for fucking ever. And I decided to punch my ticket and take the ride with it instead of hating it. I don't love, I don't love The Last Jedi.
You don't
Jedi.
Love everything about it.
About it. But I do respect at least what was trying to be done.
I agree.
And I want to see what Rian Johnson.
And I agree with that.
Just like I wanted to see what. I don't love everything Zack Snyder's done, but I'm still curious to see what he's going to bring to his own Justice League, even though I'm still convinced it's going to be the same story, not a whole lot. It's going to be different.
Right. And that's true.
I still want to see what Rian Johnson can bring to this universe.
Exactly. And that's why I think what really,
rant
I think a
over.
Lot of people, even if you didn't like his film,
rant over. Take the social media, fucking shit on me all you want. At Super Movie Pod on Twitter. SMB Dave on fucking Instagram. Shit in my fucking mouth. I don't fucking care. I'll eat it up. I'll spit it right back in your mouth.
That is disgusting. Give it to me now.
Yeah, I got dark.
You would.
We went there.
You've been long overdue for this too.
But would you watch a Rian Johnson trilogy?
100% more than anybody who directed. Well, it was only JJ.
Right. Do you want to see a JJ Abrams
hell
trilogy?
No.
No, don't either.
I know exactly what it would be.
I would have watched a Colin Trevorrow one where he.
I would have seen any of them.
I would have seen Colin Trevorrow's version of it. I liked his version from what I read from his script.
Seeing Favreau, love it. He's doing a great job.
Favreau wouldn't touch Star Wars with a 10-foot pole unless it was the Mandalorian.
He's doing Mandalorian Star Wars to
me. Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited for it. I like it. I like it. I hope it's true.
I like it a lot.
I hope it's true. I also
I think Rian Johnson's a genius.
Also, Rian Johnson is very well known for trolling fans of Star Wars at this point because they've been so hot on him that he likes to troll fans. I wouldn't put it past him to say this just to see what fucking heat he gets back for it, and this may not be true at all.
Maybe. I mean, The Greatest Revenge was making a great film after that. Knives Out.
Knives Out, right. This is great. You know, when everyone's like, you're a fucking hack. And he goes, yeah, well, you like this shit, don't you? And people are like, well, kind of. And it's like, no, you do. Shut up, you do. Because I did. All right, so that's going to do it for Superman Brothers this week. If you want to respond to anything that we said during this episode, if you really want to smash my face into the curb because I like The Last Jedi more than any other of the sequel trilogy, then that's fine. But don't get me wrong. When we talk about the sequel trilogy as a whole, I'm probably right there with you. We probably all feel the same. So don't hate me for liking one movie over the other. Just agree with me that the whole sequel trilogy was a travesty. And it's going to get better from here when Dave Filoni erases it with the with the Ahsoka series and the World Between Worlds. I got to get my own Star Wars show is what it comes down to.
It does.
Yeah, it does. I got to do it. I got to see if some other Age of Radio
four people, or 5 years ago when you first started this one.
I want to see if other Age of Radio people want to get with me and do that. But you can respond to us on social media. I am on Twitter at SuperMoviePod, and you can also catch me on Instagram, SMB Dave, over there.
I am on Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast, and also Twitter, J_SMB, and Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
And then, of course, if you want to catch any of the pre-roll content that me and Jay do, or the exclusive top fives, or any of the exclusive content that we put up over on our Patreon page, then you want to head over to patreon.com/supermoviebrospodcast. There, for just $1, you can get all the additional content that we put up over there. Then, of course, we are part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. So make sure that you head over to ageofradio.org/supermoviebros. There, you can get all of our most recent episodes that will be there handily for you in a nice little web player, or you can check out any of the other shows that are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. I want to thank all of you guys for listening. Have a great one. Cheers.